It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Middlesex County Cricket League podcast. My name's Dan Huff from Twickenham. We're recording on Sunday, the 1st of October, and it feels already like the league season finished quite a long time ago. Yet, there's been cricket going on and there will be more cricket going on. So I'm looking forward to talking a bit about that and a bit about the fortunes of one of our divisions this season and one of our clubs in that division. We're with, as I say, a couple of cricketing gurus. First up, Sal Ali from North London. Sal, how are you?
I'm well, Dan. Yeah, I was just actually thinking about weather this weekend, and the last week's been pretty nice, hasn't it? It's almost like, it makes it quite sad that the season finished as it does in September, because you kind of think, definitely could have squeezed in a couple of games in the last 2 weekends.
September's often quite nice,
isn't it? It's frustrating, isn't it? Yeah.
The late Charlie Myers from Wembley always used to say to me that he would insist on playing a game in October every season. And people would all say to him, isn't the weather rubbish? And he said, weather's often fine. First week of October, you'd be amazed.
It's true. Game in.
Whether the groundsman at Wembley ever agreed that it was such a good idea to get to playing cricket on the square in October, I don't know. But Charlie was adamant that September and early October wasn't the worst time to be playing. Our guest this evening, Harpal Sagu from Eastcote. Harpal, have you ever played any cricket in October in this country?
I don't think I have done.
Man, yeah.
No, once September's done, the kit gets thrown up into a loft and then I don't see it for a few months. So, yeah, never in October.
I don't think you're the only person who says that. Actually, serious question here. Sal Harper, were you ever post-season players? When I came down to Twickenham 20 years ago, we often had two or three games on Saturdays after the season ended, but we don't anymore. I think part of it is the post-season work on the square, but also interest in playing seems to have ebbed. Harper, what do you do at Eastcote? How do you play that one?
I think going back to probably when I was an older colt, early 20s, we definitely played a few friendlies after league season. I think sort of 3, maybe 4 weekends at a push.
Yeah, yeah.
I stopped playing them many, many years ago. But I know the club still tries to get a few on, but I think it just works with whenever the square is going to get put to bed.
Yeah.
So I think unfortunately that probably plays more of a part on whether we get a few more games in. But we're 2 grounds as well, we're quite lucky. So, yeah, we try to get a few friendlies in post-season.
Yep. How about you, Sal? What's your London strategy on this one?
Pretty much similar, actually, a few years back. We used to have at least, I think, 2 more weekends of cricket at our club, maybe even 1s and 2s games taking place. And that's just diminished over the last few years. I think we have 1 more after the league season finishes, and that's it. It's all, you know, as Harpal said, similar to what they do at Eastcote. Groundsmen's want to get things organised and the winter plans ahead. So yeah, we've actually stopped now, yeah. Which is a bit of a shame, but obviously there's reasons behind it. I'm sure what happens.
Well, we used to have set fixtures that were always really attractive. So we'd play Sunbury, which for us is always really local. They don't play in Middlesex. That was great. You know, we only played them in this friendly. And we used to play Kempton, which not at the same level as Sunbury, but it was also a game that we got used to playing. And I think I vaguely remember one of them then decided they didn't want to play the fixture again. I think it was they just struggled to get teams out, and I think that's where the rot set in. And now I think we'd really struggle to get 11 out for an away game, quite frankly, which is I guess a shame, but it's the way it goes. There has been cricket being played, of course, in Middlesex up until like 2 days ago. Did either of you follow the championship? Middlesex were right in it until about 5:30 on the last day, weren't they? Sal,
yeah, it was not played, wasn't it? Yeah, I think Adam 6 down when I last looked. Almost pulled off a bit of a miracle, but unfortunately they'll be playing Div 2 cricket. It's been a bit of a sort of rocky last few weeks, isn't it, for the club, because there's been some ECB punishment levied towards, I'm not sure exactly what I do know, I can't remember what it was exactly, how the club's been run the last 2 or 3 seasons. So I think it's a bit of a tricky time for the club at the moment. So hopefully they'll sort of pull through in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think they've been spending the wrong money on the wrong things. That's the most that I can remember. So it wasn't that they were, you know, well, you shouldn't have been spending that money on those things. And that's why the issues came up. But also batting, fellas, batting. Do you see how many batting points Middlesex got? They got more batting points in the final league game of the championship than in the whole rest of the season. I think we know where the problem was, weren't scoring enough runs. Were you following this, Harpal? Are you an avid County Championship follower or not really?
Yeah, I do. I probably follow more of the Middlesex stuff than I do maybe international cricket. But yeah, it was surprising. The batters just couldn't get any runs this year. I can definitely relate, and I'm sure a lot of the East Coast boys can relate as well. But maybe it's just been one of those summers, really tough for the batters out there. But yeah, no, I was gutted to see them go down. Fingers crossed they can bounce back up next year.
Yep. I mean, I do wonder sometimes about what difference it makes to be in Division 2. I mean, I assume there's a financial difference, I guess. But in the end, I'll certainly be switching on back in April and seeing how they get on. It doesn't make a massive great deal of difference to me personally, which division they're in. I'm sure it does to some people, but not really to me. The season will start in April and they'll play 4 championship games before we get to May or whatever they do. And then it'll hibernate for a few months and come back in September. But it does feel to me that, you know, it was at least a fascinating final day. I do think the championship, you have to invest a bit of time, a bit of effort in it. But once you've done that, it's always fascinating. And certainly the last few rounds of games were really interesting from, I guess, from if you were a neutral or if you're a Kent fan, perhaps. Because, of course, Kent ultimately stayed up. Enough of Middlesex. Looking forward, it's not, of course, as if there is no cricket for us to gorge ourselves on. Later this week, I say we record on the Sunday, but on Thursday, the Cricket World Cup begins. Sal, are England going to be retaining their trophy?
Well, I've said in the last spot, I think they're going to win it.
Oh, you did say that? Yeah, sorry, I forgot that. Yeah,
I think they've got a very good chance. Sort of mentioned positive and why I feel they can do it. Just the format's a bit different this time, isn't it? You've got everyone playing each other once and it's quite a long conference. It sort of ends in sort of mid-November.
So I was going to say March 2024 or something. Yeah, it goes on forever.
Yeah, exactly. Christmas time. So I mean, there'll be lots of obviously ups and downs for the size. I mean, I did look at the last fixture, actually India playing Netherlands. So Netherlands are going to be out there for the whole stint of the whole competition, more or less, aren't they? Making the most of their time in India. But yeah, I mean, as I said, interesting format. Obviously, top four straight into semi-finals, and then this sort of Super Six and more groups afterwards. It's going to be quite a sort of cutthroat comp this year.
I see. The Netherlands, I don't think, have played a one-day international since they qualified, which was a few months ago. So, you know, I mean, it's going to be hard anyway, wasn't it? But I think a bit of practice might not have hurt along the way. Harper, what are you thinking? Any tips for us to take note of?
Oh, geez, I definitely probably not got any tips for you, but I think England, yeah, I do fancy England to retain it. I know it's in the subcontinent. Conditions, obviously, very, very different. People, I guess, maybe always favour one of the subcontinent teams, but India have, I guess, bottled it in recent competitions. Pakistan's team attack is very strong.
You're losing a lot of friends in our listeners while using that sort of language.
They'll start hating me as well. But Pakistan's team attack, I think that could...
Yeah.
That could potentially cause a lot of surprises. That could get run through a lot of top orders. So maybe an outside bet. But no, if I had to put my money on someone, I'd go England. I think it's a strong group of lads that have gone out there. Some experience now as well. Used to tournament stuff, used to winning. And I think they've led very, very well. And fingers crossed, they can bring home the trophy.
Yep. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think India, I mean, it's a very dull thing to say, but I think India at home are going to be a tough nut to crack. And I think your point about the format is interesting, actually, Sal, because for my sins, I remember being in the West Indies when India got knocked out in the group phase. There was a group of three, wasn't there? And I think there was only one supposed to qualify, or two. But anyway, India didn't qualify. And it completely ruined the tournament financially for the hosts because, like, the Indian fans didn't come. And I remember someone saying then, well, they're never going to allow that to happen again. There's going to be one big group. India will definitely play, like, 7 or 8 matches because that's the tournament needs it for the wedge. So I'm not surprised that we've got everybody playing everybody in the top four qualifier because that gives the big, strong sides the best chance of going through. Is that right? Is that proper? Don't know, but it's the way it is and I don't think it's going to change. So if you have to pick four teams to go through, I'll obviously hold you to this. Who are you going for, Sam?
India, England, Australia, New Zealand. So nothing original here, really.
Okay. Yeah, I think... New Zealand's the one I think was quite interesting, actually. How about you, Harper? Would you agree with those four, or would you go somewhere else?
I mean, only because I mentioned the Pakistan bowlers, I'll put them in and maybe take out even New Zealand or Australia. I'll take out New Zealand and put Pakistan into that top four.
Yeah. I'm going to go England, India. Now, I'm desperate to say South Africa and Pakistan. I think South Africa are a bit underrated, actually. I think their bowling attack's pretty good. And I think ultimately you get people out that causes trouble. But if I say South Africa and Pakistan, then I'm not saying Australia. And am I really saying Australia are going to come fifth? Don't know. I'm willing it, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. So I'm going to go I'm afraid, England, India, Australia and South Africa. So I think Pakistan will just miss out, but they'll probably go and win it now, given their World Cups. But that's okay. We'll take note of that. I don't think there's any particularly controversial selections. No one's gone with Holland, have they? And we'll see how that plays out. Back to Middlesex. Sal, you've been looking a bit at Harpal's stats. They're pretty impressive, aren't they?
Yeah, not bad at all. I mean, this is obviously, again,
going embarrassing now, Harpal, obviously, just so you're aware.
Paul Smith has on the league website, so what's been collated over the few years. One-man club. Over 20 years at East Kendal, Harpal?
Yeah, I think I've done 25 now. Yeah. 25 years done.
Quarter of a century. Wow.
242 games, again, records on the website. 4,572 runs, an average of 22.75, 23 50s and 2 centuries. So not a bad return over them 25 years you've been at the club, mate.
Yeah, I'll take it. Someone said,
does it feel like 25 years? Yeah, does it feel like that, Harper? Can you remember your first season? What was that like?
I mean, I think the current state of my body, I think it feels more than 25, if I'm honest. No, I do remember my first year. It was, I think I joined when I was 12 or 13. And I remember joining, and I don't live near the club. I sort of live in Southall. So I always remember the journeys. It was me and two other friends who sort of lived nearby. We'd all be in my friend's dad's car. We're all driving down, and we were known as the three lads that were always late to those Colts games. So I always remember that first season as playing cricket for the first time and always being late to a game. So yeah, that was a memorable season for the wrong reasons.
So how did three lads from South end up going to East Coast? That sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it was different paths really. Two of my friends, Jess Chan and Ray Shah, were two young lads on the Middlesex books at the time. And they sort of lived in Greenford. I joined Greenford High. A teacher there saw me play some cricket, and she was Middlesex ladies captain at the time, Keely Juster. And she got me playing into cricket. Before I knew it, I was kind of going to some Middlesex trials without being a club cricketer. Middlesex said to me, you need to find a club. They said, there's a lad at your school. He plays at Eastcote. Go and join there. And 25 years later, I'm still here. So yeah, it's, I guess, a thank to a few people that got me into cricket and pointed me in the direction. And when I couldn't get a lift, I used to catch the two buses down to Eastcote. So all fun and games.
It's fascinating, these path dependencies that get, you know, it's almost like a chance thing, isn't it? And yet 25 years later, you're still going through the same rhythms. I mean, I think there's plenty of club cricketers who could tell similar stories. No rhyme nor reason, really, why they joined X. But once they did, it was their club. I've never quite asked you, Sal. How did you join North London?
So that was actually very local to me. I was living, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes away. I used to play originally in Kent for one of my teachers' teams when I was a young lad with two of my mates. And then got to the point where there was just too much travelling involved and just decided to find a club in the air. And that was the first club I came upon.
Makes sense to me. Coming back to 2023, Harpot, I mean, Sal and I have often sort of kept an eye out for Eastcote. I always enjoyed playing there, and the tees have always got a positive response from Sal, which is, you know, it doesn't give that sort of response easily. So you know, always respect for Eastcote tees. 2023, though, was a toughish year, right? I mean, ultimately, a few ups and a few downs. Definitely, it could have been worse. Ended with a bit of a crescendo, maybe? Well, what's your take on 2023 from the Eastcote perspective?
Yeah, I think it was a tough season. I don't think there's any other way to put it. Nobody, I think, start of the year would have wanted or thought we'd be playing our last game needing to win to stay up.
Yep.
Having the previous year played the last game to try getting promoted. So it's amazing, like, fine margins in games, how things can go against you. But yeah, it was a tough year. We, as a group, we probably didn't perform as well as we should, probably across all three aspects of the game. And I know as individuals, myself in particular, we probably just didn't score enough runs when we needed to. And as a bowling unit, probably just didn't put the ball in the right areas as much. And I think when that happens over the course of 18 games or 15, once we have three rained off, you're going to find yourself in a tough spot. And we did coming into that last game of the season. But I think in hindsight, that one game, we were sort of gone from being quite low this year to almost the feeling of ecstasy, having won that last game. We had a good crowd down the club like we normally do on a Saturday. It's one of the great things about Eastcote. You always get a good crowd in on a Saturday, particularly come the evening time of the game. And it was a great feeling to sort of walk off knowing, okay, yeah, we've not won the league or anything like that, but knowing we have a big relegation.
Yeah, for those who weren't aware, was that you were in eighth going into that last game of the season. You were playing Highgate, who were mid-table. And you could have lost and stayed up if Southampton had lost. But you must have got news through that Southampton were looking pretty strong, right? And they were winning. So that put the onus on you to win. And you came through by 16 runs, is that right, against Highgate?
Yeah, absolutely spot on. We tried our best not to sort of focus too much on the other two games. We tried not to like sort of get phones out and be checking scores all the time. Avi, as captain, was quite adamant. It was all we got to do is focus on what we need to do today. And that was the right way to do it. So, yeah, I mean, the game was getting close. I think we got a couple of early wickets. And then Sal, who's batting really well there, was starting to go. Fish got a couple early on. And we were like, we just needed to get one or two wickets to get ourselves back in. And yeah, they kept flowing. The wickets kept coming. We took a couple of good catches in there, which always helped. And then, yeah, when that final wicket went down, it was scenes of joy for everyone. And I guess a real sense of relief as well, because I think if we had got relegated, it would have been tough for the club to take. And I imagine it would have made it a very challenging winter ahead on how we regroup and how we approach the division below and personnel, et cetera, et cetera. So thankfully, the club has maintained their Division 2 status and we can go again next year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the details here. I mean, you know, for those, again, just to put some more details on that, I mean, you scored 200 in 44 overs and Highgate were 184 all out. But I noticed that Casper Everett and John Fisher put on 81 for the second wicket for Highgate. So there must have been a stage there where you thought, hold on, this ain't looking so good, right?
Yeah, no, there was. But like, Fish is a very good player and so is Everett. I mean, Everett got 50 against us earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And Fish, the week before, I popped down to watch the end of the Highgate game because they were playing Southampton and he had just hit 98.
Oh,
in a chase of about 130 odd. I remember it was a rain affected game. So yeah, we knew they could go and get these 200 quite easily. But on the flip side, we knew we'd set to back ourselves. We set to put the ball in the right area. As small as Eastcote is, I'd be amazed at how many people get caught on that short boundary.
Massive for Highgate.
Yeah, true. And funnily enough, we actually got a few of them caught on that short boundary, which was great for us. So. But yeah, no, we just, every bowler that came on done an amazing job on that day. And we had a young team, we had a couple of young players playing as well, like we normally do at Eastcote. It didn't faze them. We had left arm seam, a young lad, Toby, who sort of came in and I think it was his first or second game for us. And he took a little bit early on, but fair play to the young lad, it didn't faze him. We carried on. Avi led us very, very well with the ball that day as well. And our overseas Juvraj did very, very well with the ball. And I think he was the one that took potentially one of the crucial wickets. So, yeah, all in all, it was a good day for the club and a learning curve as always. But I guess it's nice in a way to go into the last game of the season actually playing for something. I think over the years, in these 20-odd years, it's been there's a lot of dead rubbers and sometimes I don't have the same feeling to it at the end of the season. So, yeah, it was nice to play in front of the home crowd and a game we've won with lots riding on it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that last sentiment. I know you don't build up a season just to try and have a relegation thriller at the end, but we all play the game to play in games that matter. And if you're just going through the motions, then it's all right. But the games you remember are games like that, aren't they? And I think everyone who's listening to this podcast will be able to name three or four games that they've been involved in their lives where things were on the line. And it's just nice to come out on the right side of those sorts of results. Sal, you wanted to go back a few years though, right?
Yeah, we rewind back to 2010 ups. I think that was the kind of time I started writing my write-ups for the website. And I remember speaking to Simon Butler at the time, the captain. Now, that's where you finished your highest position in the league at the club, finished third that year in the Prem. I mean, some of the names of playing for you, some real big names, Ravi Patel, Adam Rossington, Gurjit Sandhu, Alan and Chris Coleman, David Goodchild, Tom Scott. Looking at the players we had in terms of personnel that season...
Size.
Not a bad side at all. And Harper was oil was in that team as well. So looking at some of the players you had that season, do you feel that's the sort of season that got away in terms of, you know, Eastcote becoming Premier League champions?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was a 3-year period where I think we finished third that year and the next 2 years we finished fourth and fourth. And I think one of the fourths, we got 100 points. And I think back then you'd think 100 points would probably win you something, but we ended up finishing fourth on 100 points. But yeah, that sort of 3-4 year period, we had an unbelievable team. And in hindsight, yeah, we probably should have won something. But I think it was a phase where we've probably been at our most successful time at Eastcote. I know sort of early 2000s, it was a little bit Prem, relegated, promoted, relegated. There was a little bit of up and down. And it wasn't until sort of 09, 10, 11, 12 where we really managed to consolidate a good group of lads and really put some performances in. And back then, obviously, it was all time cricket. So actually getting those wins was even harder than what it is now, in my opinion. Maybe I'm a little bit old school, and a timed victory is, I think, more rewarding than an overs victory.
But well, yeah, that group of lads. In an overs game, I always think it's dead easy, Sal, in the sense that someone has to win, right? In a time game of cricket, you've got to earn that victory. And if you don't, it'd just be a draw, wouldn't it? And so I think there's very few people who'd fight you on that one. Seems logical to me.
Yeah. I think when you play nowadays, a lot of people prefer, the younger generation prefer the over stuff. I guess I'm probably one of the old school ones left who does prefer a bit of time cricket or a time victory. But yeah, no, that generation, the players you just mentioned, they were unbelievable. I think there was a point, I remember playing a game and potentially it was me and one of the other lads, Paul Metcalf, he used to open the bowling, and we looked around the dressing room. I think me and him were the only ones that hadn't played some sort of county cricket or the university UCCE stuff or some form of first-class cricket, or had retired from the game or on the verge of becoming a professional cricket, because we had obviously Rosso was young, Gurge and Ravi were both, all three of them were quite young at that time.
Ross, we looked around. With you, Harpal. Sam and I were talking before. Did he start with you, Rosso, or did he come to Eastcote? Was he?
No, he came to Eastcote. I think he was at Barnet before.
Oh, was that? No, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
He was up at Barnet. I think he came to us when he was 15. I'm not sure if Barnet had folded. I know they did around that time. Mm. But yeah, he ended up coming to us, which was great for us. Still remember his first team debut was away at Wembley. And he was coached by David Goodchild, or had a link with David, and David brought him over. I remember I was like, oh, blimey, who's this 15-year-old lad going to be our wicketkeeper? Turned up, and Rosso's always been a great character. And we looked at him, we were like, oh, he was unbelievable, Glubman, even at the age of 15. And obviously he's gone on to have a great county career and play some franchise stuff now. But yeah, back to your original question. So yeah, there probably are some regrets, if I'm brutally honest. Having looked back all the years, those 3-4 years would have been the time when, if we were going to win the Prem, we should have. But I also look back and I think that was an incredibly tough league back then as well. I mean, I imagine it's still incredibly tough. I've not played in it a few years now, but I know I speak to a lot of the Crouch End boys who play in it, and I know they talk about how tough the league is, and it was just as tough back then. So some really good sides back then that were playing, some really good players that we played against. But yeah, we probably should have gone and won it a little bit more.
I just looked up Rosso's details, actually, Harpal. Do you know how old Adam Rossington is, Sal? I'm not going to ask Harpal because he might know. What, how old do you reckon?
I'm going to say he's 27.
Oh, okay. He's 30, and I would have gone 35. I don't know, but perhaps I'm doing him a disservice. But I thought he was, you know, way older than 30, but no. So he's got a fair bit of time left in the game, right? Standing there, catching it, giving it a whack, piece of cake. Maybe not. Franchise cricket, though, when you know. What was that stat about Liam Livingston, Sal? Did you hear that one?
Yeah, something about, yeah. Was it innings that lasted next amount of balls? Or?
Yeah, he scored 70-odd for England the other week. And before then, it was in his previous 110 innings, he hadn't lasted, in all forms of the game, he hadn't lasted 50 balls. Yeah. And I'm not sure I picked up that there was any problems, but he just didn't bat time ever. Didn't need to, just went out there and whacked it. 110 innings. Every single one of them, he batted fewer than 50 balls. And I mean, if Rosso's playing franchise cricket, then, well, 50 balls is a marathon.
Yeah.
You do severe damage in that sort of time, can't you? But anyway, sorry, I'm digressing again. Back to Sal.
Yeah, so that season obviously was your sort of stellar season. We spoke about this year in terms of where Eastcote sort of finishes the club. I do know that, you know, where you're located, it is a big issue, isn't it, in terms of that catchment area. You've got Hertfordshire, Shunder, Baller, and some sort of bigger clubs will try and sort of take the young players. And again, some of your talented youngsters end up having to move and play Prem cricket. Like I think Ivan Starr went to one example this season. I mean, what are the sort of future hopes for Eastcote as you move on? I know Paul Martin you're still chairman. They're very sort of progressive and really trying hard behind the scenes to get the club moving up again. I mean, what are your plans as you move on to 2024?
Yeah, I mean, there's Paul Martin's one of many behind the scenes that are working incredibly hard to almost, as much as we've got the playing side going on, trying to improve the stature of the club. Social media, for example, is something we've really tried hard on this year, something we're looking to build on. I know James Manns, our players rep, Jason Travers on the committee this year. Those guys are trying really, really hard to sort of promote the club and get us out there on all the social platforms, which hopefully may help us attract a few players, because we know location-wise, East Coast is lovely, but it doesn't necessarily attract many young upcoming cricketers that are landing in London. I think the Hampsters and the Bronsbury's of the world get a little bit lucky in that sense, where being closer to London, they get to attract players. And like you mentioned, we've obviously got young players coming through, and I think over the last sort of 5-6 years, we've probably lost maybe 5-6 of them to Premier League cricket or to other leagues nearby. So for us, it's important to continue to produce them to start with. It's one thing trying to retain them, but actually if we keep producing them, we're doing something well at the club, and we've got a great cult set up. I mentioned a couple of the young lads played this year with us, and there's another, not conveyor belt, but if that's the term we want to use, there's another batch of youngsters coming through who look very, very good. Some on county books, others just very good cricketers playing age group stuff, and they will make an impact in the first team. And we've always been, I think, a club in the last sort of 10 years. I remember the 4 years I was captain, we encouraged as many young players to get up into the ones and the twos and give them an opportunity to play. And I think while you're in sort of Div 1 and Div 2, it's a great opportunity to do that. And Div 2 is competitive, and it's a great environment for them to come in and play. So, yeah, going forward, we'll look to continue to bring the youngsters through. Again, there's another good batch, give them an opportunity and just keep the senior guys around them to help develop them. And that goes down through all the 11s, whether they come in and start in the fours, the threes, all the senior guys down in those teams. We all got a role to play at the club to make sure we nourish and help develop these youngsters. Off the scenes, continue to kind of grow the club, really look at a sort of sponsorship avenue, see if we can get more partners in with the club. As you said earlier, our teas are amazing. They'll continue to be amazing. So, although I do miss the lunches on a Premier League game, but maybe one day while I'm still playing, we might get back there. But no, all of that sort of stuff, the social side of the club's amazing. We've got lots of social members, lots of social events. And I think anyone looking for a cricket club, East Coast kind of provides everything in terms of cricket, social aspects. So the club will continue to grow. We were talking about it, the lads was like, worst case scenario, if we did get relegated this year, even if we were in Div 3, the club still goes on and we'll continue to still develop those youngsters. The teams will still be great. The members will still be amazing. The social side will still be great. So, yeah, whatever division you play in. But ultimately, the club's the people. And East Coast's always been a people club. And whatever happens on the field happens on the field. And we'll continue to develop everything on and off it going into next year.
I think they're wise words, Harper. I really do. And I think the merger between the County League and the Middlesex Championship has played a role there, because obviously my club's on the other side of that for a long time, trying to get into the County League, and it felt like a monumental jump from one to the other. And of course, anyone who's, you know, 20 now probably won't even have heard of the Middlesex Championship. It's just Division 2, Division 3. You know, it's no big deal. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, mergers are tough, and it's not like everything's perfect, but I think you're dead right. Proper clubs go on. You know, that they deal with the odd relegation here or there, and they should deal with the odd promotion too. You know, you can always come back. You know, you can always go back down again. It happens. And I think it's a very sanguine way of looking at it. I don't know what you think as well, but I think also with players, you need to be a bit lucky. I mean, bringing through players is what we all love to do. But if you get one player who comes in and he knows other players and they know other players, then all of a sudden you can have 4 or 5 players who might have gone to school together in another part of the country, but end up at your club. And, you know, it might be that they're from, you know, South Africa, as happened with Twickenham 20 years ago. So sometimes, you know, that bit of luck can come along and really change the way a team plays, right? And you can't plan it. You know, it'll just come at you. But you've got to give yourself a chance for it to happen. So be present on the social media settings, all the rest of it. And I often think if someone finds East Coast, well, I'm not sure why they'd ever go away, really. I mean, a great place to play the game. You know, it's a fantastic place to bat, good place to bowl, and the tees are brilliant. What more can you possibly wish for? So that, anyway, that's a stream of consciousness. But it just occurred to me that there's a lot of truth in what you said. So
So we're going to put you on the spot now, Harps, with some sort of quick fire quiz questions. Some can be yes or no answers. Some can be a bit more detailed if you want to go into some detail, which is fine.
My advice is the first answer you think of is the right answer. We'll deal with libel afterwards, all right, and anything like that. Okay, but yeah.
So I'll start us off. So anyway, I think all these are also away from sort of East Coast as well. So I know your ground's an amazing ground. You've got the best school box, I think, in the league as well. You know, I rave on about that school box continuously. It's a cracking school box. Teaser also stupendous as well. So yeah. So we're going to start off. So away from obviously East Coast, what is your favourite ground?
Teddington.
Any reasons why?
I just think it's a lovely place to play cricket. Obviously, I've not played there for a few years, but it's flat. No hills, the outfield's always lovely, the deck was always good. I mean, I don't think I scored many runs there, so maybe I should have picked another ground, but no, I've always enjoyed going to Saddington. Lovely
place. Did you have the pleasure of the deer coming across the square? Were you ever there? No, I heard about it recently.
But no, thankfully, never when I played there, they stayed on the other side of the boundary, so...
To be fair, the technical players have got a method. They all walk and clap, and apparently clapping puts them off, but when the lights fade in and there's like 7 or 8 overs to go, you're like... Get off. Got a game of cricket to finish here, but of course the bloody big deer, so you can't be too mardy with them. Cool. Number two. Who is the best player that you have played league cricket with?
Oh, I'm definitely gonna upset a few people here.
This is a tricky one. We acknowledge that.
Played with, I'd have to say Tom Scholar.
Well, that can't be that controversial, surely. He's a good player. Everyone knows that, yeah.
Yeah, but somebody will be upset I said Tom Scholar. but he was with us for 5 years, and it was in that sort of period that Sal mentioned earlier where we were finishing third or fourth, and he was just a phenomenal player. He was great to bat with. I always remember we had a 100 partnership one day at Finchley, I think it was, and he came up to me when we got it, and he was like, congratulating me, 100 partnership. And I was like, Skulls, I've only scored 18 of them, mate. but he was actually thrilled that we had got 100 for that wicket. And he was the type of guy he was. Like, it was always about the team with him and working hard and training hard. And I think looking back, those 5 years were great. And he was one of the big reasons why. So, yeah, I'll go with Scholar.
Seems a fair choice to me.
So the opposite end of that, who was the best player you played against?
Again, many options. Two come to mind. As a batter, I'll say Jamie Thorpe was probably one of the best bowlers I faced. He used to take so many wickets and just move the ball at a good pace as well. So, yeah, he would definitely be up there. And Chris Peplow, he was the other bowler that bowled so many overs back in the day for Ealing, and he was incredibly tough to get away. So, yeah, I'd say those two probably the best I played against. That's only purely like duration, played against them a fair few times over the years back in that period. There's obviously been the odd like one-off player that's probably Corey Collymore, for example, and is that Stan Moore, obviously gone on and had a great career. But no, I'll stick with Jamie Thorpe and Chris Peplow on those.
Seem like two good calls to me. Obviously, East Coast is not allowed as an answer to this next one, but your favourite tea on the circuit or even outside Middlesex, if there's one that springs to mind.
Oh. Stanmore normally, I know Stephanie normally puts on a good spread at Stanmore. So Stanmore comes to mind. There's something about the Highgate stir-fry noodles. I'm a fan of them.
That's a good call, that is. Yeah,
it's a nice change. It's a nice change for all the sort of sandwiches and cakes you get. But no, if I had to pick one, I'd go Stanmore. Stephanie normally puts on a good spread. Or the only one outside of Middlesex, down the road, we used to play pre-season there all the time, was at Harefield. Huh? Harefield always used to put on a good spread as well.
I often find that village teams put on good spreads. But we used to play, when I was up in Birmingham, we used to play village cricket really in terms of Sunday friendlies. And given that I haven't played Sunday friendlies for 30 years, not many Sunday friendlies have played at Twickenham anymore, there's not so many of them about. But I always thought village cricket used to be the home of excellent tea. So I wonder if that's still the case. I'm sort of assuming it is, but I guess neither of you guys would be able to add much to that one because you haven't played much village cricket either, right?
No, unfortunately, I can't comment on that one. But what has just come to mind, the old barbecue at Ealing for lunch.
Ah, yeah. That's not bad. Yeah. Cool. I only experienced it once, actually. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Well, no. That's got to be up there as well. So there you go. There's a couple of options.
Yep. Absolutely.
So many sort of superstars in the time gone by. Which player would you say was your cricketing hero?
Present company accepted, obviously.
Sorry, so was that my cricketing hero?
Yeah, I think obviously some of those who play professionally now, I don't have to be in the league, obviously. I'm sure it's someone a bit more
better than some of the league. That's a great question. I think growing up for me, it would have been, and this is a complete contrast, Graham Thorpe and Brian Lara.
Two left-handers.
Two lefties, which I could relate to. One, I just thought Thorpe used to stroke the ball around so well. I know he was a Surrey man, and as a Middlesex fan, I probably shouldn't admit that. But yeah, I grew up watching him, and I thought he was absolute class. And then on the other side, Lara was just unbelievable, flamboyant, played every shot. I like to think my pull shot is based around Lara's lifting the old leg up. But yeah, those are the two I think that stood out massively for me as a left-hander youngster growing up.
And Sal and I have mentioned this before, actually, that there's something about left-handed batsmen. There seems to be a natural elegance to many left-handed batsmen that some right-handed batsmen, like for example, Josh Butler is a phenomenal cricket player. But in terms of natural elegance, Graham Thorpe looks better on the eye. And that's a ridiculous thing to say, because Josh Butler's bloody brilliant. But there's something about like the David Gowers of this world. They just got something that you know, it puts them apart, I think. And
I say that about left-handed golfers as well.
Oh, there's fewer of them, I suppose. You don't see them as much. But yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool. Next one. Now, this one, when we started asking this one, we got 50-50 answers, right? But it's been skewed in recent times. More people are giving the same answer. So if you had the choice, would you be listening to TMS or would you be watching Sky Sports? And I'm talking not the fact that you're watching, because obviously watching is better than probably listening, but in terms of the analysis that you're getting.
I'll be going Sky Sports.
So, yeah.
I think they've done a phenomenal job over recent years with everything they produce and the data and the analysis stuff they'd go into. So, yeah, unfortunately, I'm going Sky Sports.
Yeah. It's the value added, mate, isn't it? The value added is just off the scale. It's absolutely brilliant. Cool. Sal?
Okay, so you must have played many sort of close finishes and memorable sort of matches, but which one actually sticks out in memory? So, in terms of all the games you played, what is your most memorable game?
All close games that come to mind.
Memorable game, which if you could relive one game in your, you know, just before you entered or go into the pearly gates, which would it be?
Oh, I'm gonna pick the one that was finished by lunchtime. We went over to Winchmore Hill. Oh, I couldn't tell you what year. It would have been in that period between sort of 09 and 12. It would have been around that period. And yeah, we had bowled them out. We knocked them off. I think we bowled them out for about 40, 50 odds. Maybe 60, bowled them out, knocked it off by lunch. I remember we were playing football on the outfield just after lunch. So, yeah, that one always comes to mind. Probably got a TFC in that game, but it was a good win. I would put this year's game against Highgate, last game of the season. I know it's recent, but in terms of what was riding on the game, it's going to stick with me for a very, very long time. And I think the other one that may come to mind would have been one of the years I was captain, maybe 18. It was the year we were potentially in another relegation battle and we beat Austerley on the last day. And I remember just sitting there afterwards trying to refresh my phone and check the updates of the other games. So, yeah, again, that one, just because of the significance of it with where we were and similar situations of this year. But I think looking back all the way over those years, that one at Winchmore, it was very rare you get to finish a game by lunchtime at the Premier League. So, yeah, I'll put that one up there.
It's not often someone gives us a most memorable game where they got a TFC. That's a first, I think, actually.
Yeah, true.
But I know what you mean. And Winchmore is normally a pretty good place to bat. So for a side to be bowled out, what, 40 or 50, you say? That must have been pretty...
Yeah, I think it must have been about 50 odds. I mean, they were done by lunch, so not too many.
Yeah. Cool. Right, we're going to move on to all-rounders next. Now, traditionally, we'd sort of ask, you know, if you had the chance to watch one player play, would you go for Ben Stokes or would you go for Ian Botham? But I'll broaden it. Would you go for Stokes, Botham, or perhaps another all-rounder as being the great entertainer?
No, I'd stick with Stokes. Purely, I've probably seen more of Stokes than I did of Botham growing up.
Yeah.
As much as I watch many highlights of the 92 World Cup, we had an old VHS at home that used to be on repeat.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think Stokes is unbelievable with what he does, how he single-handedly won games. Yeah, I'd 100% go Ben Stokes over Ian Botham.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that Stokes very clearly thinks about what he's doing. Now, it's not that Botham doesn't necessarily think, but if people look back at the 200s that he scored in 1981, he just goes, "How's it wax it?" And, you know, fair play to him. I couldn't do that. And the vast majority of people couldn't do that. But Stokes, the Headingley win, you know, the way he planned it, and he was thinking about what he could do, and he had the balls to just think, well, I'm best set to just hit sixes here. And it's like, wow. You know, both of them effectively slogging, but Stokes, the
bless you, left-handed.
Although it's not quite as pretty on the eyes, Gower, but I take your point. The left-handers again coming to the fore. Yeah. So, yeah, I get it. I get it. I wish he could bowl a bit more. I mean, it just seems a bit of a tragedy that he can't bowl, but I mean,
he must be carrying something if he can't bowl. There must be something wrong with him in that sense. But no, he's a good bowler as well on his day.
Yep, absolutely. Sal?
I'm going to take a bit of a punt here on this one. I'm sure I've heard it before, but did you teach Bukayo Saka as a pupil?
I did, yeah. I had the pleasure of teaching him in year 10 and 11.
Okay.
So he was a lovely young man.
So for an Arsenal fan, there was no way that he was ever going to avoid mention in this RPAL. I'm sure you're aware. But,
Did you foresee his future, where he got to right now? Did you think he had everything to make where he's got to
He was a phenomenal talent when he came to us in year 7. You could tell straight away. Like, he was already on the books at Arsenal. I think from sort of year 9 onwards, he gets what they call a day release. So he only came to school 4 days a week. Remember, he helped us win the County Cup for the first time in our school's history in year 8. So, yeah, he was phenomenal. If I'm honest, I remember a few of us talking about it at work. We didn't think it'd be so quickly. How quick he's got to the top, we thought maybe he's going to have to go on loan somewhere and play a few games that way. But clearly we knew nothing, because he was in the Europa League team, I think, 2 weeks later, making his debut. And yeah, he's absolutely phenomenal. We knew how amazing he would be. Didn't realise it would be this quick.
I think that's a fair call, though, isn't it? I mean, Harry Kane famously had, was it 7 loans before he did it? David Beckham's league debut was for Preston North End. You know, I mean, it's pretty normal for folks to go down that route. So, respect you. How old is he now, then? Saka's
21, 22?
Yeah, he's been around
forever.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Now, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this one, because we mapped these out beforehand. But if you had a choice, do you watch Test cricket or do you watch any other format? And if so, what is the format and why?
Oh, I'd be picking Test cricket every day.
I should have known that one. That was a long half volley. It just has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. It's the pinnacle of the game. It's the biggest test for any player, I guess, who plays it. And as a fan watching it, you're going to see the best of the best. So, yeah, for me, Test cricket all day long.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. Last one moving forward, much more general question. So, how did East Coast winter? You guys aren't netting now, are you? Please tell me you're not netting now. That'll make us feel
No. Okay. We're definitely not that keen. Well, we normally start sort of just post-Christmas, January time. That we'll hire out a facility normally. We moved in the last couple of years. So last year we were lucky we used William Perkin School, the new centre there. So hopefully we can get that again. But yeah, it'll just be a combination of sort of netting, skill stuff, bit of fitness stuff, and then we'll get outdoors in April or as soon as we can.
Yep. I think a lot of clubs do that. I know certainly we do that. Yeah, there's always some keen souls who end of October want to go and have an indoor net. Yeah. But as a club, we had none of that. Because the guys who run it need to recharge the batteries. But yeah, January sort of when we kick in. Same with North London, Sal. That's what you guys do, isn't it?
Yeah, we sort of do, I think, January to sort of around March, and then move outside when the weather gets better and it's a bit lighter.
Yeah, makes sense. Harpal, it's been great having you on. Thanks very much for your insight and really appreciate your openness about East Coast trajectory, because as you say, it's easy to forget that it was only just over 10 years ago that East Coast were right at the top of the Prem with fantastic sort of set of players. Now, in many ways, not much has changed. Still a fantastic place to play. Certainly me and Sal love going there. Very best of luck in 2024. Any news on overseas players, or is it way too early to talk about that yet?
No, way too early. Yeah. Absolutely way too early. I'll try to avoid cricket for a little bit before I get back into talking about it and talking to the guys and seeing what the plans are. So, but no, thank you for having me, Dan. Sal, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on.
Good stuff. Well, go well. Sal, enjoy the Cricket World Cup. I mean, I'm sure you, like me, will be trying to engineer a bit of work from home stuff wherever possible to follow the games. But we will now reconvene in a little bit to see how England, India and everyone else is getting on. Okay, cheers guys. Thanks very much.
Brilliant guys. Take care.
Good. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Social Podcast Network.